This episode of Tastemasters is brought to you by Sweet Vinyl Bake Shop. Our dear friend and honorary tastemaster, Melissa Diaz, is the creator and bake tender of these kick-ass off-the-wall treats. What makes Sweet Vinyl Bake Shop cupcakes unique is Diaz infuses them with local craft beer and spirits, creating these like weird, insanely delicious cupcakes that are taking Utah by storm. But hey, I'm just a tastemaster. What do I know? Go to www.svbakeshop.com and order some to find out what Sweet Vinyl Bake Shop is all about. Again, that's www.svbakeshop.com. You can also find Sweet Vinyl Bake Shop or Diaz on all social media platforms. Go ahead, get your local craft beer and spirit-infused cupcakes today. I promise you will not regret it. Until the next cupcakes. Listening to the Tastemasters, where we delve into the world of craft beer, liquor, and other beverages. All right, guys, fun episode today. I have two of my dear friends sitting in front of me, and then first I want to introduce my co-host, Deanie. Deanie, wizard of all men. How are you, my friend?
I am fantabulous. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining me this night, and I have a special guest with us today.
I'm excited.
One of my friends and local bar-ees, Brent. Brent, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, man. I'm pumped. I have adored you since you sat at my bar all those years ago, it seems like. What was it, last year? I think so.
Probably, yeah. It's been a while. But you're not often there at the hours I go.
I know. So, you know? Damn. Or if I am, I'm working.
You're
working, right?
Yeah, you're back in the brewery. Back and sometimes you see me and come out and chat. And
if you ever see me in the brewery, just knock on the window. I'll come say hi to you or text me. Mm-hmm. I have my watch on. But Brent, I have a question for you right off the get-go. When's the first time you met me? Tell the story. Tell the people how we met. If not the first time, then one of the three.
I think the first time would have been in Strap Tank by myself, and you were bartending there. And it wasn't very busy because I usually go early for lunch to avoid the crowds. So you had time to talk to me, and it just kind of hit. And then the next time would be what I brought my wife with for dinner. And you were bartending again. And I told her, we need to go in and I need to introduce you to this guy. And so it kind of just grew from that.
It was a bromance that grew from that.
Yeah, I'd call it a bromance.
Yes.
You hug well.
Oh. Thank you. So, Brent, you have been homebrewing lately. And you just got into homebrewing. So tell me, what fascinated you in getting into homebrewing?
Well, I've been drinking beer pretty much my whole life, mainly since I joined the Army when I was 19. Before that, it was binge drinking and throwing up. And then I discovered, pot. This was a long time ago. I'll give it away right now. I'm an old man. So, that was the thing back then, and it was like so much cooler than drinking. But then when I got into the Army, it kind of switched to beer. So for many, many years, I've been drinking beer, but I've never known how to appreciate it until craft breweries started popping up some years ago, but I wasn't around them much, and I started realizing there's a lot more to the flavors than just your American lagers. I was drinking lights anyway, mainly Bud Light, and a lot of them. And when I was in Germany with the Army, I ended up getting into mainly Pilsners.
Ooh.
German Pilsners.
Oh. Spoiled.
And then when I came back to the United States, I couldn't find a beer I liked at the grocery store. They're all American lagers, and they just tasted like piss water.
That's fair.
And so I thought I'd just buy the cheapest I could get. And then over the years, I became able to afford premium, so I got Bud Light. But with craft brewing, I'm like, wow, this is amazing, and I know nothing. And as I'm approaching retirement, I'm telling my wife, I'm thinking about, I'd seen some ads and things about home brewing. So I've been like talking about that for probably 2 years. And finally she said, you keep talking about this. Why don't you just do it? Just pull the plug. So I bought a homebrew kit that has everything you need and brewed a batch of Hefeweizen that came with it in the discount I found.
Your first beer was a Hefeweizen, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think the first beer I ever had was a Hefeweizen.
And it was, if I measured the specific gravity correctly, it was like 11% ABV.
Get that's wrecked.
That's a and I made house. A lot of mistakes. And to me, it had a very off taste and was too strong to drink with the off taste. Mm. And I gave a few away, but eventually drank them all, mainly all myself. And then switched to liter and 2 liter, you know, carboys and bottles. And I'm like, finally, I thought, well, I'm doing it well enough, and you make 1 or 2 liter batches, and they're gone before you know it. And that's same amount of work, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went back to the 5 gallon buckets, and I'm like, that's a whole lot of work with the buckets, with you know, all the racking you have to do and everything. And then I read about the fast fermenter. Fast ferment, I think.
Tell us about this.
It's a conical fermenter, so it's cone-shaped, and it's affordable relatively when you look at the next step up would be stainless steel, and it's super lightweight and easy to clean. And that was one of the things. I decided I was going to do my brewing in the basement because nobody else in the house likes the smell of beer or is beer drinkers.
Right.
So
that's fair.
It looks like that, just to put in perspective.
Oh.
So, yeah, I started just getting more and more equipment to make my life easier and make my beer better. Mm. And just watching video after video of anybody that had a how-to. And then I realized pretty quickly, there is no one way to brew beer, which is kind of fantastic and amazing. And everybody disagrees with what's right.
It's true.
You know, what is the best way? How long should you do this? How long should you do the other things? And just so many things that are so different. So, yeah, I got the mega pot, you know, the big 8-gallon pot and a propane burner. And I brew in my basement. I stick those out in the window well, and I have steps that lead up to it so I can easily get in and out of the window well. And I do my brewing out there, and I've got a workbench set up, like, right at the bottom of the steps. And then I just, like, when it's cooled, I use a wort chiller. So when it's cooled, I just use gravity to put it into the fermenter and, you know, aerate it from there. I now have oxygen. I used it for the first time today.
How'd it go?
A little problematic because mainly I didn't know it was left-hand threaded on the oxygen. Took me quite a while to get that hooked up, but, you know, live and learn.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've been brewing for 4 months, and I've brewed 12 batches so far.
Nice.
Wow.
Total of, I think, 48 gallons.
And that's and yeah, you're sharing these beers, correct, Brent? Are you drinking them all to yourself?
Mostly all to myself. I'll share it with anybody that comes over, but most of our friends are cocktail drinkers, you know. And my wife makes hella cocktails.
Oh. And shots too. They'll get you in trouble.
So do you have recipes that you've written down and kind of like have favorites, or is it just kind of trial and error every time?
Right now I'm doing recipe kits, totally extract. I don't have all the equipment necessary, nor the knowledge in my mind, you know, and I don't want to jump the gun and get far ahead of myself. But I've been learning that even with the recipe kits, you can deviate wildly from them and make things your own. So, like I had a red ale kit that I got from Beer Nut, and I decided to dump cherries into it.
Oh.
So I could, because I was at Garage Grill, and they had a really nice cherry red ale. And I'm like, I could do this. I've got a red ale that is just in the primary when I do the secondary. So I went to the store and bought some pitted whole cherries and then pureed them in the blender, course, everything sanitized and just dumped them in during secondary. And
voila.
It's fermented. It's in a secondary. No, it's bottled. Yeah, I bottled those yesterday, actually.
There you go. Now we're making a trip to Brent's house. That's what that means.
Oh, you definitely can. Come try out my latest brews.
Yes. Okay, before we go in any further, Brent, I want to try one of the. You have four beers in front of us that you made.
Yes.
And let's start. Let's crack one open. Let's crack one open. And which one are we starting off with? Tell us the story.
I think you were suggesting the Caribou Slobber Ale.
The Caribou Slobber Ale. Now that's a name.
That is a name.
One thing I've figured out about this is it's probably a knockoff of Big Sky's Moose Drool.
Oh, that's Moose one Drool? Of my favorite
brands. If
you've
brands. Ever had the Moose Drool.
Oh, yes, I have.
Because should I tell you the notes and the flavors and the notes?
Are you familiar with Adini?
Or do you want to figure it out?
You've talked about it a lot on this podcast as one of your favorites. I don't think I've actually experienced it, then so I'm excited.
Instead of us telling you, let's give this one a gander. 100%. This is Brent's Moose Drool.
Okay.
Sometimes I call it Moose Knuckle. It's bad.
That's a different name.
It's a different. That's fair. Holly got mad at me for calling it Moose Knuckle.
Do you want to do the honors?
I will absolutely do the honors, if I may.
Thanks, brother.
Oh.
We had a couple of our bartender friends over the other night for dinner, and David was there, and this was Kai's favorite.
This was one of his. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Holly could not stop drinking the cherry porter. I think she took two bottles for herself. Mm-hmm. So I only got to taste it because she drank it all. Mm-hmm. And then she also drank I won't get into it, but the Maker's Mark Bourbon Barrel one. But
that smells by itself amazing.
Deanie, tell me, on the nose, give the people what you smell from Brent's home-brewed Moose Drool wannabe.
I mean, immediately I get kind of like a nutty caramel almost. Mm-hmm. Like toffee as well.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. Brent, you should make a candle out of this.
Yeah.
That's really good. Your next job should be make a candle out of this.
Like, this is like Halloween candy for me. That's what that smell is.
Man. I should have had this one the other night. What do you think, my friend?
I really like that.
Easy, huh?
That's really nice.
This will get you in trouble. What's the ABV on this one there, Brent?
This one's a 4.2.
Not bad. Easy.
Not bad at all.
See? Mm-hmm. No.
This is legal in the grocery store.
We could buy this.
We could go sell this right now. Let's go to Harmon's. I think, I don't know why, guys, but I want to pair this with smoked Gouda. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Smoked Gouda would be great.
100%. Charcuterie board. Oh, yeah.
Brent, what would you pair this, your beer, with?
Anything.
Anything.
I'll pair any beer with anything.
More beer. A second glass of beer.
That's easy. No. I taste a fairly strong molasses as I'm drinking this as well.
Molasses, and it has, you said toffee.
I said toffee.
But it has that like toffee nut character.
Yeah.
Like it wants to be.
Maybe a little chocolatey too, I think.
I really like that. I mean, before this, we were actually talking about walking in here. We were talking about you having a Lunchables, and I was bringing up those little like salami packet things that we got. And this like darker style of beer, absolutely 100%.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's some meat.
It's a light brown. You know, it's deceiving. It looks darker, but it drinks like a light, light
100%,
beer.
100%, yeah.
Brent, well done, my friend. So what number of batch is this, if you will, if you top of your head?
Probably around eight.
Eight, and we called this one the Slobber, right?
Caribou Slobber.
Why the name? Why the Caribou Slobber?
That's what, I get these from Northern Brewer, the recipe kits. They've just been my favorites, and that's what they called it.
Ah, okay.
And I pretty much followed their recipe. They furnish the ingredients and things, and you just have to, like, add everything, add the hops at the right time, and then the next thing, and...
Ooh, what hops did you use in this one, if you don't mind me asking, if you remember?
I don't remember. I'd have to look that up.
Because I couldn't pick them out.
I didn't even
know.
I only
get straight malt characteristic.
I don't get any of my, like, no hops from this.
I mean, there's
it's low hop.
Slight bitterness at the very back, like the very end. But it's you gotta be searching for it.
I'm not. I'm still stuck on that caramel and molasses.
Yeah, you're taken by this.
I love it.
I think Brent just became your new favorite brewer.
Yeah, I'm happy with this. Sorry.
All right, Brent. So I got a question for you.
Yes.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are you? Tell the people how old you are.
I don't mind because I'm not ashamed of it. I'm kind of actually proud of, you know, being where I'm at now. And I think I pass fairly well for someone in their 50s.
Dini, would you attest to this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 70.
Boom. That's microphone drop.
Not fair.
You aged as well, huh?
Very.
Okay, Brent, now that people know, because then, you know, I think today is actually Willie Nelson's 88th birthday, by the way. Yeah, so speaking
he's a bit
of
older than me,
smokes because you have the gorgeous long hair, you have a great beer, you got that salt and pepper. It's got a nice amount of salt and pepper, which I mostly
salt.
Want. Stop! I still want,
but not in my head.
No,
hardly
only your
a
beard.
Gray hair in my head.
Only beard. I can't grow the beard. You both have beards. God damn.
We could talk about this for a while.
Beards. Here we go. God. But
that's a subject for every podcast, right? You always
always bring up beard. I'm beard envy. I have beard envy.
Against the grain or across the grain?
Ah, goodness. So, Brent, 7 years old, joined the military at 19.
Yes.
So that was a while back, my friend.
Right. That was in 69.
69, okay.
Put it into context. You know, Vietnam, which is why I joined.
Okay.
I joined to avoid the draft.
Ah.
I talked to a recruiter because I was going to Canada. And I was worried about going to Canada because I'd be a deserter for the country and never be able to come back to the United States. So I asked a recruiter, I don't know anything about the Army. What am I running from? He convinced me to enlist for 3 instead of getting drafted for 2. And then he could put me in a job where I'd be nice and safe, which I liked.
That's smart.
So after basic AIT training, through a clerical mistake, I was sent to jump school and the 82nd Airborne Infantry, Quick Reaction Force, where I spent the majority of my military career.
That's not Canada.
Jumping out of aircrafts.
Jumping out of aircraft on a regular basis.
So you're telling me how, on a weekly basis, how often were you jumping out of planes or helicopter, anything, aircrafts?
Just a couple times a month, really, because I wasn't that gung-ho. Okay. I was like a wannabe hippie from the 60s. And
I get you.
You know, that just, the military just wasn't me. I was a fish out of water, but I was also extremely successful at it. So.
And this wasn't planned. They just said, hey, one day they walked up to you and said, you're going to be jumping out of planes.
Well, after AIT, they read you your orders and I got jump school. And I went in to say, mistake. And they said, sorry, you have to go. And then when I got to jump school, and they start harassing you, because they told me as soon as you get there, you can just tell them you don't want to jump. You know, it was a mistake, and they'll let you out.
And that was bullshit.
Well, there were people doing that and saying they don't want to. And they got holy hell from the instructors.
How so?
And, I mean, they just, in their face, yelling at them, making them do things. And, you know, it's pretty bad back then, you know, like today's Army. But, so
and
I was too afraid to quit.
I don't blame you. I mean,
figured I'd go through it and then see what happens.
I don't know what I would have done that, Brent.
Yeah, hopefully you don't have a fair of heights or anything.
Were you scared of jumping?
I do. I still do. I still have a fair fear of heights. But it taught me how to face your fears, which is awesome. You know, if you're like ready to jump out of an airplane and you're scared shitless and you do it anyway because you trust your equipment and your training, it's like suicide and then floating down on a canopy.
Interesting.
Of course, floating's kind of a
loose term.
Military parachutes come down fast as possible.
Because you're a sitting target if you're in the air.
You're a target, yeah. So you want to come down fast.
So coming down fast is not easy on your knees.
No, which is why I'm limping nowadays.
So now you're going back on this. Because you were doing it for, what, 20 years, you said? How long were you doing the airborne?
I actually was on active jump status for 8 years. But I retained my parachute status so I could be called to jump at any time. for the whole 20 years.
For 20 years. Jeez. Wow. And so during, you only did it for the 8 years, but after the 8 years, did you continue to, you had to continue to jump in order to keep that certification up and going, right?
No.
No.
No. Only to keep active status, to draw the pay. Mm. When you're not jumping, if you don't jump like frequently, then you lose the extra pay.
So then you chose, have you been, after 20 years, have you jumped out of a plane since?
Yeah.
For fun?
For fun. What? I had never done a free fall. And when I married Tracy, that was one of the things on her bucket list, was sometime before she dies, she wants to skydive.
Shout out to Tracy, by the way. Gorgeous wife Brent has.
Oh, yeah.
She's amazing. She's the one who makes all those cocktails.
She's young. She is nowhere near.
And she has great hair, like myself, but salt and pepper. Gorgeous. Yeah. I want her hair when I grow up. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I think she's even got curlier hair than you.
But. See?
So when you jump out of the plane, if I might ask, how quickly do you have to pull your chute compared to skydiving where you fall?
Talking airborne or for fun?
Compared to skydiving, I think you free fall for up to a minute or slightly more. I've never been myself. Mm-hmm. But jumping out for like military purposes, I'm assuming.
It's all static line.
Oh.
What we did.
What does static line mean? I'm not familiar with that.
It means you hook up a cord to like a clothesline that's running down the length of the aircraft, and as you go out, it pulls your chute for you.
What the hell?
Automatically pulls your chute. You don't get to pick.
What?
Yeah.
You don't decide. It is
nope.
And you're just trusting the chute to like bring it down safe-ish, right?
Right.
How fast would you make impact if you don't like? Could you guess how fast? Because your knees took a beating. It's not like
I think they said it's about the same as jumping off of like a 4 or 5 foot platform onto the ground.
Okay, that's not. I mean,
so not terrible.
Terrible, but
you don't want to like land on your feet because you've got different depending on the wind direction. Because our chutes weren't very steerable, you would come in sideways or backwards or anything. So you had to learn how to land
backwards.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So if you came in backwards, how do you land? You just kind of like hit with your heels ass and roll?
You twist. It's always the same five points of contact. Ball of your feet, fleshy side, buttocks, shoulder. That's four.
I don't think I can remember that.
Hopefully head isn't five.
Oh my God, yeah.
If you're coming in straight backwards, you want to, like, as you're hitting, twist your knees one direction and your shoulders the other direction. So you expose all of those.
Oh, so how many times did you get hurt doing this?
I only had to go to the hospital once, and it was extremely minor.
This is not so fun, Brandon. and then your wife wanted to do it for fun, but in a safer way where you free fall for a minute-ish. Is that what we decided?
I think it's
somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And then does that minute seem like an eternity? Because oh my God, because I feel like I don't know if I could do that, Brent. I could do that.
You know, we were strapped to instructors, so it's tandem with an instructor behind you.
Even you, after all this training you've had, you still had to go.
I haven't trained in skydiving and free fall. That's a whole other skill set.
Okay. Interesting. I'm learning so much right now.
And
you guys did that. You only did it once?
You have to, like, get out of that little plane. And I did this, less than a year, I believe, from the time I had my total knee replacements. So I still wasn't totally recovered.
Who are you?
Yeah, skydiving's on my list. Why not?
No wonder you make beer.
Oh, I had already been hang gliding since.
Oh, my God. And you're afraid of heights. And you're still doing this shit. There.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the rush. Talk about the rush. It's something like that. I can't walk towards the edge of a tall building and look over the edge.
No, hell no.
No.
I make Holly take a picture for me, and then I pretend like I saw it. Yeah.
It's kind of like that immediate, like, jumping into the deep end of the pool, almost.
Yeah. You just got to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just got to do it. You just got to, like, okay, I know I'm going to be fine. I know I'm trained well enough. I can handle pretty much everything that comes my way. Just keep a cool head and jump.
That's fair. I mean, one time, this was like three, 4 years ago, my wife was lovely enough to buy me airplane lessons, more or less, and how to fly an airplane. And if on the ground, thinking about that, because it was a surprise, she literally dropped me off at the base and said, hey, you're going to learn how to fly today. And going through that, I was like, I don't trust this plane. I don't trust this plane. You're sticking me in a rickety-ass plane, shoving me up into the sky with some random stranger next to me, and you expect me to fly through the air. As soon as I got in that plane, and it did take some conversing, as soon as I got in that plane and we started to get into the air, and he said, okay, you have now control. I'm taking my hands off of everything. You're in control. My immediate reaction was, I have the utmost respect for this plane, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I trusted everything this plane could do, but I now realized it's on me. I have to now rely on my own senses. And, you know, day one flying a plane, I'm just like, okay, I respect the equipment. I'm now having to focus on what I have to do.
This goes back to what you were saying, Brent. Like, you respected the equipment.
Right.
And then you kind of trusted it. And, it's interesting. Yeah, that's fascinating. Weird. It's good.
You know, I didn't enjoy parachuting near as much as I enjoyed hang gliding, though.
Why is that?
When I was at Fort Bragg with the 82nd Airborne, there was a hang gliding school that opened just off base. And I asked a bunch of my buddies, we ought to go do this. And everybody's, yeah. And I'm like, okay, let's pick a day. I think my grandma's going to be sick or whatever, some lame excuse everybody had. And I'm, okay, nobody wants to do it. So I went by myself, took hang gliding lessons just off a little hill. And then I was transferred to Germany. And I continued my training in Germany. I found a hang gliding school that was about half Americans and half Germans. So there was enough English spoken that I could continue my training. And by the time I got back, this would be in the early 80s. Before I got back, I was flying in the Alps.
Oh, my God.
And thermaling. So, you know.
And that was probably amazing. I wish I had a GoPro and put on you. That'd been
probably my favorite flight was off of Pikes Peak in Colorado. 14,110 feet in the air. And your first step...
In the air?
It's 14,110 feet is the altitude of the mountain, the peak.
Okay.
So our first step, because of the wind direction, was about a 3,000-foot sheer cliff with not enough room to get airspeed and a flat surface to run over. So it required what we called a diving cliff launch.
Which that's is a name for something.
You get in as much speed as you can. And then as you go over, you pull the nose in. So you go off in a dive with the nose down. So you pick up enough speed that you can fly out of that. And then
I'm shitting myself right now.
Four of us that did this all caught a big thermal that was just right in that area and cranked up to cloud base, which was 16,800 feet that day. No oxygen, which FAA requires above, 10,000 feet or something?
Sure.
So you're so tired. You're so worn out. You don't even want to fly. I just let go and, like, draped my arms over the control bar and just hung there like, this is cool. I think I can see, like, so many states from here, you know, and you're so high you can't even see the cars on top of, you know, Pike's Peak that are parked there. And, you know, it was just, like, fantastic.
This is like a euphoric feeling almost.
And when I was ready to come down, it took me probably close to an hour because of all the lift happening to get down.
From the time
I wanted to.
Brent,
I don't know if I want to go more or less now.
Wow. Like, oh my God. I'm blown away right now.
Yeah. So I did that for about 8 years.
No big deal. Shit.
Did that in Germany, and then I did in California, and I flew several times when I came home on leave. I'd bring my glider and fly here, you know, point of the mountain or some of the other big mountains around here.
When's the last time you flew those?
About 1990.
Oh, so it's been a minute.
I retired in 91.
There you go. Sheesh. So you haven't done it for fun? You haven't taken Tracy? Does she want to do something like that?
We went to, Outer Banks, North Carolina.
Okay.
And they have the Kitty Hawk area where Wright Brothers did their glider flights and then powered flight. And so we went there and they have a hang gliding school there. And we just did their basic, you know, introduction lesson. It was Tracy, her brother, and I. and we all did that.
That's cool.
Cool, nothing big.
Nothing scary.
Germany.
14,000 feet in the air for an hour. Jesus, Brent.
No, only a couple of feet off the ground.
I could do that, Brent. Okay, now I have anxiety. I say we move to the next beer to calm me down.
I would do that.
All right, Brent. What's the next beer you ready to showcase for us?
I'm thinking this one, unless you want to do this one
Let's do the porter.
Okay, this is my bourbon barrel porter, which is another recipe beer, followed relatively close to the recipe.
Oh, how'd you deviate? What happened there?
Mistakes.
Okay. Good mistakes, bad mistakes?
This was a 2-liter batch, so this was probably my fourth or fifth brew.
Okay.
And this one has some complexities. You know, you have cedar chips that you soak in whiskey. Bourbon specifically is what they want for bourbon barrel.
Okay.
And I put Maker's Mark in because I think really nice. I've really liked Maker's Mark.
Well, they got the goddamn wax on it. It's got to be nice, right?
That's right.
Opening those bottles suck, by the way. I don't know about you guys, but especially putting a berg on it. Oh, my God. Anyway, so oak chips, right? Or cedar chips?
Cedar, whatever the barrels are. Oak.
Oak, okay.
I think it's oak. Mm-hmm. And have to soak them for like, I forget if it was like 24 or 4, I think it was 48 hours.
That's not bad.
To soak it in the bourbon and then dump that whole mix in.
Bourbon and chips as well?
Just whole mixed.
There you go.
The soaked bourbons. Now, I wish I would have had a dry hop strainer back then, which I didn't even know of those, because bottling was a problem because it still had the chips in there and they'd like clog up my bottling wand. It would clogged up my opening in the fermenter. Mm-hmm. And it was only in a 2-liter, it was in a regular bucket, but a 2-liter, a 5-liter, but 2-liter batch.
This is one of the final bottles you have then, one of?
Yes, it was one. I have one more left.
Keep that one, brother. Keep that one. Cheers.
I'm gonna order it again, and this time do some different things.
Yes, I'm excited.
I like to experiment.
That nose. You can get the bourbon right there. Bourbon's right there.
I think so.
If you ever get tired of making beer, you should make candles because this smells fantastic.
See?
Yeah.
That's twice today, Brent. Man, I can't. I don't want to keep smelling that.
That is the right amount of like that bourbon taste. That is fantastic.
Clearly got the bourbon in there.
Yeah.
Don't tell Brent this, but this is the one I stole from his house and took and had it, enjoyed another night. It was awesome.
Won't tell Brent that you took anything from his house.
I would have gladly let you have any.
No,
I like to share.
He gave it to me. It's fine. But I like the oak on this one.
I like the oak.
Mm. I can barely taste the yolk, but I can definitely taste the bourbon.
Fill that bourbon. For me, it's fill the bourbon, and you're going to get a woody characteristic.
You do. After you taste the bourbon, you get that woody, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we had a beer. I don't know if we were on the podcast when we had that beer, but remember that really, like, over-the-top smoky beer that we had? Where we thought we both were going to like it? I'm pretty sure it was at your house upstairs, and we had, like, Dairy Queen or something.
Oh, yeah. So we opened to Epic, was it?
I don't know if it was Epic or not. We had a few that night that we were trying, and it was just over the top. Like, I think it was either a stout or a porter, but it was just too much.
Oh, I recall. I won't mention who it was because I don't want to offend.
It tastes like it was charcoal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is pleasant.
This is on point.
Pleasant, Brent. Wow. So what would you do differently on this one? I'm curious because this... what I've learned over the years, I guess, I've been doing this, is a true or a good brewer is never happy with that beer, right? And so can you attest to that?
That's what I'm feeling so far, and it really excites me when people say it tastes good and they like it.
Good. But I know you probably want to fine-tune this. I will drink this. You give this to me any time of the day, I will drink this for you. But what do you, Brent, want to make different with this beer?
Well, first, now that I've got more of a handle over the whole brewing process, I would get things in at the right time better and have better equipment for it. I'm not sure there's something in the taste I would think about trying to mellow out. It just seems to linger afterwards, like an aftertaste.
Okay.
That I'm not sure if that's as pleasant as I'd like. but I just think I could do it better next time around. And this is probably my, not my next, maybe my next, or my one after my next.
Yeah.
So.
Do you know, I think I'll go well with this one. A little bit of chocolate. Just a touch of chocolate.
Yeah.
Imagine that bourbon with a little hint of chocolate. Just a touch.
That'd be a good lead in to my chocolate cherry porter.
Oh my God, Brent, you spoil us.
By the way, this one's 6.6.
Oh, get wrecked. Well, because the bourbon. Well, is it actually 6.6? Because the bourbon kick it up a little more?
I'm not sure how it all works, but I did the final.
So the gravity came out, okay.
After everything had been in there for a couple of weeks.
Because I think it's a little more hotter than 6.6. That's just me.
Kind of tastes like it to me.
Yeah, because maybe it's deceiving.
But I don't know if the bourbon overpowers the.
You know what, Brett? Let's just enjoy this.
Science. This is
good. I don't know. If I like it, I'll drink it.
Right. So, Brett, I'm going to ask you a question before we go on a little quick break. You are a motorcycle rider, an avid motorcycle rider. That's how you met your wife, correct?
Correct.
How long have you been riding the old hog?
Oh, I first started riding about 1972, I think.
Okay. So right after you got enlisted, right?
I was in the Army. Okay. This was the second time because I got out after my first enlistment.
It was 3 years you were supposed to
I did my 3 years and I got out. And I got married during my first enlistment.
Okay.
And while I was out, my wife was diagnosed with extremely brittle diabetes. If Corey's listening, I understand he has it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working in a gas station at the time.
Okay.
And no insurance, no anything. And I was making too much to get the state's help. And like, I'm in trouble. I have to do something. So I went back to the Army recruiter and said, because they've got good medical. Yeah. Can I get back in and explain to them why? And they got me back in. And it ended up, I started making more rank. I took it a little bit more serious and ended up staying. Not that I liked it. It's just like that seemed to be the only way to take care of my wife.
Damn.
And so she died in 2012 from all the complications of diabetes, which she was 56, which is a pretty good age for somebody who was diagnosed with diabetes back in the early 70s. This was back when they only had one kind of really insulin, two kinds, I think. And, you know, you couldn't control anything. It was just totally random. But, so she had all those problems. But because of that, when her kidneys failed, I actually learned how to be a dialysis technician.
Oh, really?
I went special training to learn how to do home hemodialysis.
Interesting.
That's where you're putting two needles into their arterial access every day.
Damn.
And filter her blood for 3 hours.
You do that every day?
5 days a week. Can't skip more than one day in a row. So, yeah.
Damn,
pretty much every day. Go to work, come home, wash and sterilize the equipment. It's already washed, but you sterilize the equipment, get it all hooked up.
Damn, Brent. Wow.
So that's one of the things I am, as a dialysis technician.
Jesus, what can't you do? Oh, my God.
There's still a lot of things probably that I could think of.
I mean, because at the age of 70, I was going to ask this question later. I want to ask this now, though. It's a great segue. What in life have you not done that you've wanted to do?
Fly an airplane.
Hey. I know a guy.
Yeah. Let's hook him up. Let's do that. Fly airplane.
That's one thing, but I don't think I'm going to.
Why is that?
I'm not as passionate about that. That's what got me into hang gliding. I thought, well, I'll learn about flight and, you know, the air and all of the things about that through this hang gliding, because it's cheaper than like air, you know, pilot lessons and stuff.
Absolutely.
And back then, the Army didn't pay much. You know, my first several paydays were less than $100.
Jesus.
Until I got to jump school. And after jump school, I was making an extra $55 a month. So that basically half again my pay.
Mm-hmm.
But try to survive on that.
Yeah. And look at you. You did it somehow, brother. Yeah. You did it. Holy cow.
I did it successfully. I retired as a chief warrant officer 3.
And it's so, 3 higher than, I don't know, what's ranking? It's 3, is 3 high?
Originally, there were only 4 of them. Okay. So that's not too bad. So I was a sergeant first class and enlisted when I switched over to the warrant, which is an officer. So, you know, you go from blue collar to white collar, basically. More leadership. So
you're, I mean, because I saw your awards downstairs. And
some of them.
Some of them, right. Some of them. And, yeah, you had some trophies. You had some of your hats down there. You had some pictures. Man, keep going on forever. This guy, I told you you like him.
I told you 100%.
But my real passion was when I got into juggling.
Oh, hold that thought. Because we got to take a quick break. We usually take a little breaks in the middle of this. So we're going to take a quick break to finish this because I want to ask Brent some questions off the air. So let's take a little break and we'll be right back. Tastemasters is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. By using the code TASTEMASTERS, you will receive 10% off your ticket upon checking out. Food only. But guys, it's badass food. They have chicken sandwiches, Thai wings, poutine. They have brunch every Saturday, Sunday. The food is fantastic. One of the best in town. Again, use the code TASTEMASTERS upon checking out. 10% off your entire ticket, minus the alcohol. Guys, let's keep it local by supporting local. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you wanted to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms. Hey guys, it's David here. We are starting a Patreon, which is kind of like a tip jar, but digital. Basically what it does is it helps enhance the content of our podcast. If you like what you hear, want to help us out, go ahead and head to www.patreon.com/tastemasters and subscribe. Anything will help. All right, Dini, you have been sitting here patiently for the past like 20 minutes.
It's been, yeah. Because
before we left on a break, Brent gave a little secret that he used to be a juggler.
And you didn't let me ask any questions.
Nope, I cut you off because I want Brent to tell, after he opens another beer, while we drink one of his other beers, I want him to tell his story about being a juggler. So not only is Brent a airborne officer, motorcycle rider, adrenaline junkie, a lifesaver, trained killer, beer enthusiast, he can juggle. Not just juggle well, juggle for a profession. Yes.
Oh.
Okay, Brent, which one are we going to open up now?
I would prefer to just do the chocolate cherry porter.
Last one,
porter.
Brent's chocolate cherry porter. This one is probably... I'm going to tell you this, Brent. This is probably the other night you showed me. This is probably my favorite one. And I don't like cherries, by the way.
This is my favorite. Of course, that might be superseded when my next one is finished.
Of course.
Fermenting. I'll be bottling it like next weekend. And it's a
It's a Mother's Day special. That's what it is.
Raspberry chocolate milk stout.
Get wrecked.
And the recipe is just milk stout, chocolate milk stout.
But you added raspberries.
And I added the raspberries.
What part? Did you put primary? Did you do it secondary?
Secondary.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Did you just throw them in? Just sanitize them?
It was pureed already. So it came in the can pureed. And I dumped about 3 pounds of raspberries in a 5 gallon.
In a 5 gallon?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Should be overwhelming.
That's going to be very raspberry, but I like when it comes very, I like raspberries, so I'm okay with that. All right. I'm very surprised with the head you have on this, Brent.
I was surprised too pouring it. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know, if you pour it right down the middle like you would a porter or stout, you know.
Yeah.
Gets a decent head.
Can we go back to that, the candle business? I think you need to do that.
Yeah.
Dini, what do you smell on this one?
I was drinking it. Well, sorry, what?
What did you smell on this one?
To me, this is a very, like, you said candle, and I thought, what emotion am I getting out of this? And I thought, oh, this is calming to me.
Okay, cool. I like that.
It was a weird transition because I was looking for more of an emotion behind the smell than I was looking for notes off of it.
So I haven't tried it yet. This is me, Brent. It's like a cherry banana bread.
You smell the nose?
Mm-hmm. That's what I get on the nose. I like it. Yeah.
To me, the chocolate tends to come second, and the cherry...
Cherry is first.
Followed by a definite chocolate.
But then I think that at the very back, it's like balanced cherry chocolate. I like that. It's like one of those cordial cherry. That's what you've been into it. That's what you're drinking. I had two bottles in my fridge of this, and I probably fought myself for about a week not to drink the last one.
Really?
I
can see why. Blame me? No, yeah, I don't. Right.
This one's my favorite one.
It's my favorite, too.
God, I am excited for the raspberry
one. This is Ghirardelli chocolate that I put in it.
Oh.
Cacao.
Whatever, that cacao. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ghirardelli's. Yeah, get ready.
It's like a full bag of that.
A full bag. Oh. Is it semi-sweet, dark? What did you put? 70%, 90%?
I don't know if it had any of that. It's just cacao.
You just threw it in there, huh?
I threw that in.
Did you blend it with the cherries as well?
No, they went in separately.
Okay.
Different times.
When did the chocolate go in?
It went in first, early in the secondary, and then a little bit later, the cherry went in.
Oh, man. Goddamn. Mm. I like it. I like chocolate on it. All right, Denny. You've been waiting for this. Brent, rumor is...
You can juggle.
You were a juggler. Tell us about the juggling, my friend.
Juggling started back in... the early 80s when I was on recruiting duty in Southern California. And it started because one of the kids that we had enlisted who was in the delayed entry, his parents were vagrants and we were afraid he wasn't going to ship. So we encouraged him to hang around and he could juggle. He was good, you know, three balls with just some tricks. And we would just have him come and entertain us as often as he would. Now, one time he said, I could teach you how to juggle. I'm like, all right. My main motivation was another reason to keep him around. Mm. But also, I was curious of that. I didn't think I was skilled enough to juggle. So he taught me. He wasn't a good teacher, and it took quite a while. But once I got the knack of it, I saw this juggling club that was like putting on an exhibition at one of the local malls in Southern California. So I went and watched them and then went up afterwards and talked to them. And they said they met regularly in a park and I should come join them on Saturdays and they would teach me more. So I got into club juggling, you know, of course, ball juggling and got into club passing with multiple people and all the different patterns and things like that you can do. And then on a lark, some of them could juggle on unicycle. So I bought a unicycle.
Okay.
Don't you own two?
Currently own two. I had three.
Oh, shit.
Okay, hold on. Wait.
You're blowing his mind, Brent. One step at a time.
So club, I'm thinking like the things that kind of look like bowling pins.
Right. Okay. They're plastic.
Nowadays. On a unicycle.
Yeah, that was the start.
That was the start.
Actually, the start was frisbees. We would play frisbees on the unicycle.
So you'd be catching, like,
catching and throwing. On the unicycle.
Okay.
Which really throws you off balance when you have to reach for a wild throw to catch.
Or if you have one goddamn wheel, Brent, of course.
But, you know, I mean, it really helps to do that first before you try learning to juggle.
Oh, interesting.
Because juggling on a unicycle, when people say, what do you focus on? My answer is typically the cutest girl in the audience in front of me. Because you can't focus on juggling or unicycle riding, or the other one falls apart. You have to let your, you know, your senses and your training control those for you. I learned how to idle, which is rocking back and forth in the same place without moving, just rocking enough to keep your balance, and passing clubs with people on the ground, other people on six-foot unicycles. I graduated to a six-foot unicycle, giraffe, they call it.
What does that even look like?
Imagine a six-foot goddamn unicycle. It
has
that's what it looks like.
Has a chain, pedals and a chain like a bicycle that just goes straight down to the wheel below you.
Oh.
I even saw it and didn't believe it. Like, when he showed me the unicycles, not just one, two.
I have like a small one of 20 inches.
I mean, yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen a unicycle in like real life. They're not like some mystic creature, but I'm imagining like just one half of a bike.
We're going to go hang out at Brent's house.
That's why it's cool. And when I retired from the Army and moved out here, I found a club in Salt Lake to continue my juggling and practice. But I got a job down in Provo as a software engineer, which I also am. And currently,
okay, one thing at a time, Brent. All right, calm down.
I know.
And one day I brought my unicycle in for more or less show and tell, or because I'd been telling people about it. And one of the other programmers from another team saw it and said, "Oh man, I used to ride unicycles when I was a kid. Can I take it out and try it?" And I let him, and I never let anybody that I don't know ride my unicycles because they're going to get hurt and they're going to damage my equipment.
Okay.
He did just fine on
it. Oh, thank God.
And then I said, "Oh, that's cool. Do you juggle?" He says, "What's that got to do with riding a unicycle?"
Everything, apparently.
Boy, do you know.
So he was interested, and he could juggle three balls. He'd learned that. And I just decided I was going to teach juggling classes at work during lunch. And we'd go out on the lawn every day. And he was the only one that stuck with it. I had a whole little group there for a while. But he stuck with it, and he started getting good.
Wait a second. Is this your partner?
This is my partner, Mark Nelson.
Oh, my God. This is all making sense.
We started just juggling in parades, little parades for all the little cities. And, and they were happy to have us. And so we started putting some routines together from the parades. And the next thing you know, I says, we should, do an act. Like, actually put a show together, because very few jugglers, there's a handful of jugglers that are professional around here, but hardly any really have a full act where they could get on a stage in front of a seated audience and entertain them for an hour. So I wanted to put that together. And so we became the Juggle Nuts. Nutty Jugglers. It was what my wife came up with at the time. And we became one of the top entertainment acts, of jugglers, magicians, clowns, things like that. And we were in demand. We played the state fair many years in a row. We did almost every county fair in Utah. We did the Boise Renaissance Festival multiple times.
What the hell? Did you dress up as clown too? Like, did you put
face No, paint? No. We had basically two costumes. One was vaudeville type tuxedo type costume. Mm-hmm. And the other one we call our Robin Hood costumes, with the Robin Hood hat and feather in it.
Oh, okay.
For doing Renaissance fairs or different things.
Did you
like
wear tights
that.
As well?
No.
That's the one thing you put
that,
out here.
That came up and we tried it and neither one of us were happy or comfortable in tights.
Understood.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun. And how many people have a hobby that pays, that makes money? We started reporting it as a business because we are just making too much money. And, the bigger places are giving you tax forms and reporting you to the IRS. So we started got a bank account with our juggling's name, and we just hit big time. We had the DARE program back when that was a thing.
Oh yeah. Jeez. Mm.
Saw our show and offered if we would interject a few things that they wanted for their message into our act, they would list us on their list of DARE approved school assemblies for elementary schools.
Okay.
And all we basically had to do was say something like, "Stay in school, don't do drugs."
Easy. Easy.
And work that into our scripts. And so that was easy. And,
super easy. Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. And, you should stay in school. You should, more or less not do drugs. Not that I wasn't a drug. But, when the Army got serious about drugs, I quit for a long, long time. And now I'm taking them mostly medicinally.
There you go.
I have my medical marijuana card, so yeah.
It's okay. Oh,
yeah. But yeah, I mean,
I think for
libraries started picking us up. We've played at almost every library's program. That's where my current wife, that's where Tracy first saw me, but didn't know me.
Oh.
By juggling. She got turned on from juggling.
She took her young elementary school age kids to the Orem Library, where we were performing, and they watched us perform. And I've been on TV a lot with my juggling. I've been on every news station around here, you know, the morning news where they have the
neat
little things of what's going around. And so that and this show called Fluid TV that was kind of like this, only on TV, just finding out interesting things and people. Mm-hmm. They did a bit on us, and we're blown away.
I wonder why.
Yeah, see? All right, Brent, I'm going to ask
this question. We basically just quit with the pandemic now because there's so many.
So just recently you stopped juggling.
Yeah. Oh, I've been juggled professionally for like 30 years. And we quit with the pandemic because there's several jugglers trying to make a living off this. And we're not trying to make a living. We're both software engineers. So it just didn't seem right to take the gigs.
I respect that.
Okay. I would just rather refer them to the ones that are like having a hard time making ends meet.
Especially during this pandemic, right? Yeah.
Plus, I'm getting old. And
but could you still juggle right now? If I all of a sudden brought out balls, you could probably.
I could probably do it.
Just look at this.
Probably be sloppy.
No, this guy's got no fear.
Probably sloppy at this point.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't
want to try the knives right off.
Knives? Okay.
I juggle knives and torches.
Chainsaws?
And we pass the knives and torches every time we do our show.
Did you ever cut yourselves?
Yeah.
Did you ever burn yourselves? Did your luscious hair ever catch on fire?
No.
Okay, thank God.
Priorities.
But one of my favorites is like with all three torches, my partner, I dare him to juggle the knives under his legs, but my torches have gone out, see, because the fuel ran out. So, he's just going to have to do that one by himself. And then he's like, he'll do it if I'll do it. And finally, we get the crowd chanting, making me do it. And when I juggle the torches under the legs, the first thing I do is lift up one leg and hold all three torches as low as I can. And the flames are like a couple of 2-3 feet high.
Oh, Brent.
And you can just see, I said, I think things could go wrong here, you know, because you're holding it right by your junk.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, okay, you know, and everybody, Mark says, we're willing to risk it, aren't we? And to the audience, and it gets me on, yeah, we're willing to risk it, we're willing to risk it. So, well, if you're willing to risk it, you know. And anyway, you got to give in to peer pressure, right? So I start juggling the fire, and then I start juggling under my legs. And then Mark calls me a show off, like, oh, yeah, we'll take this. And then we start throwing them at each other. And so we pass knives and torches for the last bit of the finale. And
don't do drugs is the metaphor of the whole thing.
Well, that kind of went away. That was just something that we had to add in. And then when we quit doing those.
Oh, my God. Are you listening to this, Dee Dee? I told you Brent's a badass.
I'm a beer drinker.
I was lost at the because I had a question to go back a little bit. I was like, wait a second, you do parades? Like, there's no longer this idling that you mentioned. You're now on a street throwing things at each other.
Don't throw them while we're moving.
Okay.
You don't juggle while you're
ride and juggle while I'm moving, but I can't pass while I'm moving.
Why is that? I mean, it's already
difficult. I'd have to have somebody else moving at the same speed and probably backwards because, you know, you almost need to be facing or nearly facing the person you're passing.
Okay, so if your partner could go backwards and you're going forward while moving down the parade, you guys could do it.
Speed. Yeah.
But what we did right away, we realized that if we're going to entertain, just riding down the street isn't sufficient. So we would typically start 15 or 20 minutes before the parade and just work the sidelines. Do a mini show here, you know, 2 minutes here, 2 or 3 minutes there, back and forth across the street. And then when the parade came, we did the same thing. But so we would start before the parade and we were successful if we finished with the last entry in the parade at the finish line.
Oh.
Oh.
So you get these long parades like the 24th of July or the 4th of July.
What a great fucking day, 24th of July.
And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. You're doing this for many, many hours in
July.
Often 90 plus 100 degree heat. And it's brutal.
Especially if they're on fire.
Oh, we didn't do fire in the parades, rarely.
Oh, that spice it up.
We mostly just kept the clubs.
That weren't lit.
The clubs? Clubs don't, you could burn them one time, maybe.
Deanie, yes. I know your mind is rocking right now.
I have a few questions. But
what
yes.
questions do you have for Brent on this? You just found out this man is a 50-year-old man. 70-year-old. 50-year-old man who's done all this in life. What questions do you have for him? I know you do.
Well, there is one thing that I know that we haven't talked about yet, and that was you played in a band.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a band or bands? Multiple bands? Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Tell us about your first one.
Well, the first one was when I was a teenager. I think I was about 14, 15 when I got a guitar and started learning how to play, and some friends, the neighbors, like a couple of them, one of them got drums and one of them got a bass guitar, and we put a little band together and got to the point where we actually won a battle of the bands in Salt Lake, you know, at the biggest venue that they had against multiple bands, and we won.
Nice. Well, at 14?
No, by then I was probably 16, 17.
What was the name of the band?
Dabblers.
Dabblers?
The Dabblers.
The Dabblers.
I like this.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
And then our lead guitar went to the Air Force Academy, and we fell apart. And I continued playing, but not in a band, until my first tour of Germany. Yeah.
So that means in your 20s, right?
Yeah.
So was it covers? Was it your own material?
Covers.
What'd you cover?
This was a country band.
Oh.
And their drummer worked kind of next to me, like in the next building over.
Okay.
And he approached me one day and said, "I hear you play guitar." And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Can you play bass?" And I said, "Yeah, I could."
Sure.
And he says, "Well, would you be willing to come audition for us? Because our bass player just walked out on us, and we have a big gig, the biggest gig of their, you know,
of their lives
so far."
Make or break.
It was opening for a country artist who had several hits back in the 60s, Johnny Tillotson. You probably haven't heard of him, back in the 60s country artist, but he was pretty big.
Okay.
And they were playing at the biggest military club in Frankfurt, you know, biggest in Germany.
It's Germany, goddamn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Country in Germany.
Country. Huh. Very popular. Very, very popular. And it was mostly for Americans because they're in the military. But, and this is all military members in the band. So,
okay.
So my first gig with this band that I didn't know any of their songs because I wasn't country. I was a rock and roller.
That's fair.
So they would announce each song with, and this one's in the key of G for our bass player.
Key of G.
And I would try to follow along, you know. And here we are opening for, you know, somebody who's like got
actual hits and stuff. Yeah.
I think some of his went to number one, like Talk Back, Trembling Lips and things. Uh-huh. So they told me I'm not what they're looking for, but they'll keep me temporarily
until
they find a replacement. So I was fine with that. And then a couple of months later, they said, "You know, you've made so much advancement. Would you be willing to just stay with us and be a permanent member? Get a raise and everything else like that," because that's the kind of band they were. So I played with them for about a year, and we played all over Germany, you know, American and German clubs, some all German clubs.
Drank the German beer.
Okay, yeah.
Played in Germany, rode the skies in Germany. God damn it, Brent.
Yeah. And then I joined another country band. Not that I liked the country, but my unit had big festival party thing, and they had a band who they really weren't that good. But after they played, I went and talked to the one guy and I told him that I was a guitar player, and I haven't been able to find anybody to jam with lately. And he says, oh, well, we're having a practice like Saturday night or something. Why don't you come and jam with us? I'm like, okay. So I went and jammed with him. And I'm playing my rock and roll leads licks on top of their country songs.
Oh, just wow. Cause interesting.
I could make them blend in, you know, because there are similarities, you know.
Okay.
Whether you want to admit it or not, which I didn't.
I still don't.
There are similarities. And then, like, after we'd been playing for about an hour, the guy that really was in charge of the band says, okay, band meeting upstairs. Brent, you wait here. And I was like, what? Because this is rude.
Yeah.
A little bit. Jamming and they want to have a band meeting and don't want to send me home. They want me to wait.
That's bullshit.
And I was just down there stewing, like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then they come down after a few minutes, really, you know, and they're all beaming and smiling, you know. And the guy says, okay, you're in. I'm like, in what? Well, weren't you here to audition for the lead spot for our band? No. I'm sure I can. Have fun. Yeah. So, can I have a few days to think about this if I want to get into that again? Because playing in a band is time consuming, and being in the military doesn't it's give you a lot of consuming. Free time. You know, it's not yeah. it's not an 8-hour day.
Yeah. Damn.
But I did. So I played with them for a couple of years.
Did you ever juggle a guitar?
No, I didn't.
Have you thought about juggling a guitar?
I thought about playing guitar on the unicycle.
Oh my God, Brad. Yes.
Because you could like hook a little amplifier to the base of the big 6-foot unicycle.
I guess, yeah.
The upright pole there.
You could jam and, while unicycling.
Yeah.
I don't think normal people have this like idea, but yeah, you probably know.
Dance on the 6-foot unicycle. Since I could rock back and forth, I could alter the speed I was doing that and like dance to the music.
Oh, okay. Could you hop on it? Doom, doom, doom.
It's doable and I've done it a few times, but I never like got good at that.
Interesting. I saw one guy jump rope with a unicycle and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
Could you do that?
No.
I think you could. I really do.
Back when I was then, if I worked at it, I'm sure I could.
I bet you would. I bet you could. Absolutely. Damn. But,
I mean,
it wasn't on my list, you know.
No. Yeah. I mean, unicycling's not on my
There's
list.
There's enough stuff on your list,
it.
I think. Yeah.
But we were approached by Ringling Brothers.
What?
And which you time?
2-year contract.
And? You said no.
I said, we're interested. Let me talk to, you know, my partner and our families. And my partner was all for it. We'd quit our software engineering jobs and run away and join the circus.
Literally.
When we got the wives involved.
No dice.
It didn't happen.
Interesting. Do you look back and regret that?
No, not really.
Yeah?
I'm just tickled pink.
That's really cool. Because
they saw us. They watched us.
You turned heads doing that. And that's what's cool about it is someone noticed you. It's big time name noticed you. That's really cool, Brent.
I even had... I don't know if it still exists. There was a movie studio called Like in the Scriptures. It was one of the LDS movie things going on.
I remember in the Bible, unicycling juggler.
Yep.
But we were doing the storytelling festival. You know,
Timpanogos Festival.
We did that. I did that 20-something years in a row and never missed one. And we did that for charity for most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was these grown-ups sitting around, and they called me over. And I thought they wanted me to entertain them. And I came over, and I'm starting juggling. They said, no, can you just sit down with us for a minute? We want to talk.
Stop doing like, that. Stop throwing things.
The producer and who knows what of that, like in the Scriptures company.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, it's very difficult for us to find long-haired, bearded men in Utah County.
Oh, my God.
Who don't scare people.
That's fair.
And they were watching me for a long time, and just adults, children, everybody, just like flocked to me, you know?
Like Jesus?
And liked me. Ended up turning them down because I really didn't have the time to
put in. Did they ask you to play Jesus?
They didn't give me any specific role. They wanted me to go try out.
You look at Brent and you tell me.
Okay, let's be serious.
Jesus-like or biblical-like?
Don't go there.
I like this.
Wow. I had a time in my life where I started wondering, you know, who is Jesus? Could I be Jesus? Because I think I'm a really nice guy. Yeah. What more is this, you know, but yeah.
Jesus broke bread and wine, you give beer. It makes sense.
He could trouble, we don't know.
Yeah.
God damn. But now I know I'm not.
I appreciate it. Wow, God. Brent, this has been a night and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, and we do this over beers. Like this right here is an example of why I love the beer community, is because you can crack one open and have a simple conversation. I use that term loosely. This is not a simple conversation, but
this is a simple conversation.
This is a simple conversation.
Well, but it's got value, though. Yeah. It's got value. It's been awesome. Brent, I think you are one of the most incredible human beings I have ever met. And I say that genuinely because, holy shit, dude. I'm glad that we bromanced from day one. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for opening your heart to me and my wife and bringing mm-hmm. us to your home and hanging out with your wife and you. And you've been nothing but just a great friend since day one. Thank you so much.
We'll have to do it again in a couple of weeks. Hey, I'll have a couple of new brews out.
You tell me what. I mean,
I forgot that we're drinking your beer like halfway through. I went, oh, that's right. And he brews beer.
Yeah. But Brent, you have an incredible life and you have many years to come. I'm so excited to see what more adventures you come up with, brother. Good God. Dini, I told you, Brent, he asked me like, who's Brent? I don't understand Brent. Don't worry. You'll find out who he is.
I did.
And so it'll blow your mind because you've blown my mind, Brent. And Dini, thanks again for coming and hanging out with us. I hope I did blow your mind. Actually, Brent blew your mind.
Yeah, he did. The juggling thing, I'm still like,
wah. Right? But when you see the unicycles, it's going to like blow your mind even further because I couldn't believe it.
The seat's about the top of your head, you know.
Oh, okay.
Easy, right?
See, that's so nonchalantly. Yeah.
I can barely ride a bicycle and drive a Prius. And Brent's over here doing his
juggling knives and torches on a 6-foot unicycle.
Okay. And makes beer.
I couldn't do that on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but Brent, keep this passion going with brewing beer. I think you're getting better and better. Keep going. If you have any questions, ask everyone you know who brews beer. There's always someone, like you said, that there's more mm-hmm. to be learned. Everyone thinks they do it the right way, but there's not one right way to do it.
No, and there's so much to learn. It's absolutely. Like every little piece can be tweaked.
Yep. And once I surrender to that fact that like I am not a good brewer. Like I am not. I'm here. I'm learning.
What is a good brewer?
I don't know anymore, dude.
One who makes something you like, right?
Yeah, I guess as long as I can drink it, I'm okay with it, right? But Brent, is there anything that you need to ask? Is there anything that us as Tastemasters can help you as a home brewer?
No, I think I've asked you questions about, you know, some of the things I'm doing, and you know, you've given me some advice. You know, you pushed me to the oxygen for aerating, and
thank God you went there. By the way, much easier.
It's my first time.
It'll get better.
Oh, the one that I just brewed today is a hula hopped coconut milkshake IPA.
How often do you brew?
Oh my God!
About once a week.
Wow.
We have beers to drink, Dini.
Wow. Not quite once a week, I think, but pretty much. I mean,
still, that's amazing. And especially all the stuff you've brought in today, like you're hitting all my favorites. Porters, that's up there. 100% number one thing I love, porters. Mm-hmm. I've never had a moose knuckle or whatever you want to call it.
Moose drool.
Moose drool. Oh, excuse me. But this is, it's worth it. It's 100%. That was good.
Yes, thank you for bringing these beers, Brent, and sharing that with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thank you for telling a little bit of all your stories. You are literally the jack of all trades.
Most stories.
Yeah, but they're awesome, and you've done it all, brother. And if anyone who's listening to this sees Brent, stop him, say hi, because this man is a great, great guy.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Big-ass heart, dude. I thought I had a big heart, and you trump anyone's heart I've ever met. Like, you're a great guy, Brent. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming all the way down. During a late night, keep me up all night to tell me stories.
All the way down. It was, 3 miles?
But I think that'll do it for this episode. Gene, do you have anything else?
I have a lot more, but hey, for another time.
Brent, right. Do you have anything for us?
No, I don't.
Okay. Until the next homebrew, my friends.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_audio.